Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading from the Rantoul Press for the week of June 10th. We'll start with some local news. County Treasurer running behind processing payments. From Urbana. If you paid your property taxes on time, but the Champaign County Treasurer's office doesn't appear to have your payment, you're not alone. The Treasurer's office is running behind on processing some payments, and its system is automatically posting delinquent penalties even for some payments that were made on time. After seeing a string of social media comments about this issue, Faith Johnson of Champaign said her husband checked Tuesday to see if their own payment, made on time June 1st, had been recorded. Sure enough, she said their payment hadn't been recorded, and there's a late fee on it. County Treasurer Marisol Hughes and Chief Deputy Treasurer Alejandro Aguero said the Treasurer's office is getting a lot of calls from taxpayers, and callers are being assured the late penalty will be removed for all payments that were made by the due date, which was June 1st, for the first of two installments. Once we process the payment, the system automatically updates itself and the late fee goes away, Aguero said. She and Hughes also want taxpayers to know they are working short-staffed and are running 2 weeks behind on getting tax payments processed. We're under a lot of stress right now, Hughes said. County Board Finance Chairman Jim Goss said he's also been getting a lot of calls from taxpayers about this issue. I don't have any idea exactly what's going on, but I'm being inundated with constituents who are telling me the same thing, he said. Goss said he did speak to the treasurer's office last Thursday, and they said they were behind, he said. Whether it's a credible excuse or not, they're behind and trying to catch up. Part of the issue is the system itself, according to Hughes. The county treasurer's office has relationships with two vendors, one that processes the tax collections and one that posts them. And what would work best would be one system that would do both, she and Aguero said. This is a system that was inherited by Hughes, who was appointed treasurer 3 months ago after the resignation of former county treasurer Laurel Prussing. The state's pandemic lockdown began 2 weeks after Hughes took office. Another big issue has been that some taxpayers who voluntarily sign up for the option of having their tax payments automatically withdrawn from their bank accounts don't let the treasurer's office know when they've sold their properties. And for anyone who assumes the treasurer's office would know a property has been sold, there is no way for us to know, Aguero said. In those cases, the payments are still automatically withdrawn from the accounts of the sellers. The buyers also wind up paying, and the treasurer's office has to sort it all out, she said. This has affected some taxpayers who haven't worked in recent months due to pandemic-related job losses, and now we've taken their funds, Aguero said. I'm really concerned about this, and we're trying to help them as much as we can, she said. This is the second year in a row for property tax issues in Champaign County. Last year, the tax billing and collection process was delayed by a month because the Illinois Department of Revenue ran behind on issuing the county a final multiplier. Johnson said even if late penalties won't ultimately be charged for those taxpayers who paid on time this year, she has concerns about the older taxpayers who are left to worry about the status of their payments and are fearful that their taxes could wind up being sold in the county's delinquent tax sale. If there are technology issues in the treasurer's office, Johnson said, she doesn't understand how they can go unresolved in a university community where technology expertise is readily available. John Bambanek, a county business owner, said he paid his taxes in late May, but his taxes are also showing up unpaid, and a late penalty of about $75 has been assessed. He checked the status of his own tax payment because he was in the process of refinancing his house, he said. The county still has months to sort out who paid and who didn't before beginning the process of this year's delinquent tax sale, Bambanek said. But for people who are selling or refinancing their homes now, appearing to have unpaid property taxes is a real problem. People hate paying property taxes anyway, and issues connected to payments they make on time plus the pandemic aren't helping, Bambanek said. I think people are already in bad moods, and this makes it worse, he said. Whether your property taxes are escrowed and a bank makes the payments, or you pay your taxes yourself, you can check the status of your payment at the treasurer's office by entering your street address or property parcel number on this website, champaignil.devnetwedge.com. You can see the amount billed, amount paid, when it was paid, and whether there was a penalty assessed. Man arrested after criminal damage reported. Police arrested a Rantoul man on charges of mob action, criminal damage to property, and aggravated domestic battery Tuesday evening after multiple windows were broken in an apartment building and a vehicle. Troy D. Stewart, 24, 1400 block of Eater Drive, was arrested and taken to Champaign County Correctional Center. Bond was set at $10,000. Officers were initially called about 7:40 p.m. June 7th to the 1300 block of Harmon Drive for a report of criminal damage in progress. Police found a group of people leaving the area and discovered multiple windows in an apartment and a vehicle had been broken. Police Sergeant Rodney Sullivan said multiple interviews were conducted and videos obtained regarding the incident. No arrests, however, were made at the time as the investigation continued. Police were again dispatched to the same area at 7:11 p.m. Tuesday regarding an unknown problem. Officers found that one of the people allegedly responsible for damaging property in the earlier incident was in the area and had made a statement that the original victim felt was threatening. Sullivan said investigation into the incident continues and additional arrests are possible. From Rantoul, Kavanaugh retires after 26 years at RTHS. This isn't the way Julie Kavanaugh wanted her career in education to end. The coronavirus pandemic and stay-at-home order made saying goodbye difficult. It was hard not being able to have a connection with students not being there, she said of the last half of the second semester. I've sent a lot of emails out to kids, phone calls, but it wasn't the same. There wasn't that closure that I really wanted. The last awards night, the last graduation that I'll go through, that was hard. Making things a little better was a parade arranged by staff at Rantoul Township High School for Kavanaugh and co-worker Patty Early. There were so many cars and teachers and administrators that went by the front of the school and honked, Kavanaugh said. Kavanaugh, who is 57, is retiring as counselor, having spent 26 of those years at RTHS, 34 years in education total. Previously, she was at Armstrong Township High School after starting at Cisna Park. Giving Kavanaugh an even deeper attachment to RTHS is that she is a native of Rantoul. She was born at Burnham City Hospital in Urbana and graduated from Blue Mound High School, and then Eastern Illinois University, where she earned a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's in counseling. Kavanaugh held the job formerly known as guidance counselor, later shortened to counselor. Same job, just a different title. Whatever the name, she enjoyed it. I love working with teenagers, Kavanaugh said, helping them through high school whatever way that I can, whether it be dealing with personal problems or planning where they want to go to college, helping them find a summer job, helping them wherever they need. She called the job fun, yet challenging. She got attached to many of the students. Kavanaugh started at RTHS in 1994 and has seen her share of changes. We used to do schedules by hand, and we would have a paper copy of each kid's schedule, she remembers. Now we use Skyward, and it's all computerized, and everything's right at your fingertips, where it used to be mimeographed. Technology has definitely improved things. It's easier sometimes to get hold of parents through email, and they've got cell phones. It's definitely made communication easier. She's seen her share of trends in education. There's an educational change, it seems, about every 5 years, she said. Then something else comes along and you have to change and adapt with it. One of those changes was No Child Left Behind, under which every child, it was hoped, would meet a testing standard. Everything was based on test scores, so the emphasis was getting the kids ready for the tests, she said. That has gone the way of the dinosaur, and the emphasis now is towards standards-based learning, which is based on state guidelines and offers more individualized instruction. If a student meets a standard of what they're being taught, they can move on to the next level, she said. Most of the changes, she said, have been for the better. Kavanaugh loved her job. It has been wonderful. It really has. I have met so many great students, wonderful students, co-workers, administrators. It's just been amazing all around. I look back on my 34 years, and I just look back very fondly and think about all the wonderful people I have worked with and met and all the kids that have touched my life. And I'm just very happy that I've chosen this path. Kavanaugh, whose last day on the job is June 15th, is kind of wide open as to what she will do post-retirement. She enjoys traveling a lot, so she figures to visit her son Brad and daughter-in-law Stephanie, who are moving to Seattle. Daughter Kelly recently got a job as sixth grade teacher at Ludlow Grade School. Kavanaugh's parents, Joe and Barb Vonham, who like Kavanaugh live in Rantoul, have been a great support, she said. Her grandmother, Carolyn Clark, who is 96, also lives in town. God Country Freedom event set Sunday at Rantoul Church. Maranatha Baptist Church of Rantoul will hold a God and Country Freedom event from 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday, June 14th. Refreshments will be served beginning at 5 p.m. and a multimedia event will get underway at 6 p.m. in the church auditorium. A team from Freedom Focus Ministries will be leading the event. More information is in Freedom Focus Ministries at www.freedomfocus.us. For more information or for questions, contact the Reverend Mark Wilkerson at 217-778-7014 or maranathabc@frontier.com. There will be live music and videos featuring the heritage of freedom that has been enjoyed in the United States, Wilkerson said. It is open to everyone. I believe that this type of event can help with the healing of societal strife and enhance the spirit of freedom-loving Americans to be more appreciative, kind, and supportive of our fellow citizens, Wilkerson said. The church was originally planning a community event for June 13th at Wabash Park in Rantoul, but due to the COVID-19 social restrictions, church officials decided to move the event to a smaller venue on the church's property. The church is located at 3105 County Road 1700 East, North Maplewood Drive. And now from Ian Wang, Rantoul Press columnist. Learning from our family trip to Smoky Mountain National Park. Many cultures encourage learning through traveling and reading. Sometimes people find it more effective and fun to learn through travel than through the written word. For example, there is a traditional Chinese saying, "It is better to travel 10,000 miles than to read 10,000 books." In fact, this preference is not only about learning through fun, but also about having real experience with the world beyond our borders. For many years in June, I normally wrote my column about one of my visits to a national museum during my family's national or international trip. However, this year my family had to change our plans from a trip to Italy to the Smoky Mountains National Park due to the global coronavirus pandemic and following the nationwide stay-at-home and social distancing order. On the first day back home, I texted my good friend and Rantoul Press editor Dave Hinton, "Safely back to home, and had a really great time during our family vacation at the Smoky Mountain National Park. It was a rare choice for me because I normally preferred social, cultural, and art events rather than natural." My friend replied immediately and straightforwardly, "It's good to be well-rounded. Our society has gotten too far away from the earth and nature with concrete, big cities, and urban sprawl. Don't get me started. Glad you had a good time." I have to agree with my friend, and I must say that the Great Smoky Mountains National Park was a great choice, and we enjoyed every aspect of this great national park in the southeastern United States, with parts in Tennessee and North Carolina. I must give credit to my wife and daughters for their work in planning our entire trip. According to information available online, plus national parks brochures and what we learned from the trip, the park encompasses 522,419 acres, 816.28 square miles, making it one of the largest protected areas in the eastern United States. The main park entrances are located along U.S. Highway 441, Newfound Gap Road in Gatlinburg and Townsend, Tennessee, and Cherokee, North Carolina. The park straddles the ridgeline of the Great Smoky Mountains, part of the Blue Ridge Mountains, which are a division of the larger Appalachian mountain chain. The park contains some of the highest mountains in eastern North America, including Clingman's Dome, Mount Guyot, and Mount LeConte. The border between the two states runs northeast to southwest through the center of the park. The Appalachian Trail passes through the center of the park on its route from Maine to Georgia. The park was chartered by Congress in 1934 and officially dedicated by President Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1940. The Great Smoky Mountains was the first national park whose land and other costs were paid for in part with federal funds. Previous parks were funded wholly with state money or private funds. The park was designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1983 and an International Biosphere Reserve in 1988. In addition, the park also preserves multiple historical structures that were part of communities occupied by early settlers of the area. It was the most visited national park in the United States with 12.5 million visitors in 2019. The park is internationally recognized for its mountains, waterfalls, biodiversity, and spruce fir forests. Major attractions include Dollywood, the second most visited tourist attraction in Tennessee, Obergatlinburg, and Ripley's Aquarium of the Smokies. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park anchors a large tourism industry based in Sevier County, Tennessee, adjacent to the park. Tourism to the park contributes an estimated $2.5 billion annually into the local economy. We rented and stayed at the Bear Cabin near the mountains outside the little town of Gatlinburg in North Carolina. Since Smoky Mountains National Park was just partially reopened when we visited it, we had to bring most our food supplies with us. During the day, we had all sorts of outdoor activities in the mountains, and during the evening, we cooked, chatted, and shared photos we took on our cameras and cell phones with the family and our friends through social media. We had a great time and enjoyed our entire vacation and family gathering. If you asked me, I would say these things stood out as the most memorable during this trip. I was impressed by the most beautiful and glorious sceneries of the park. I was amazed by the wildlife, such as the bears, horses, and turkeys, coming face to face with many of them. And I was astonished to learn the earliest settlers lived in these mountains more than 10,000 years ago, which got me to wondering what happened to them and where are their descendants now, if any. Dr. Ian Wang is the curator of the Spurlock Museum and may be contacted by mail at wangyu@illinois.edu. And from Scott Reeder, this treatment must end forever. As I've been watching racial tensions escalate, my mind has wandered into the realm of poetry. To be precise, I've been thinking of the prose of the great African-American poet, Langston Hughes. The lyricist from Lincoln, Illinois, wrote, "What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat? Or crust and sugar over, like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode?" The words are as applicable today as when they were written in 1951. Racial discrimination remains all too real in our society. During my more than three decades in journalism, I've become all too aware of this. I remember my first full-time newspaper job at the Galveston Daily News. I was only a few weeks out of graduate school when I was sent to cover a shooting. The victim was still bleeding on the dirt when I got there, and the smell of gunpowder enveloped the air. I talked to witnesses, police officers, and others. I worked the scene hard, just like I had learned in journalism school. I hurried back to the newsroom and began pounding out my story. I pitched it for prominent play to the managing editor. He asked one question, "Is the victim black or white?" When I told him the victim was black, he replied in his syrupy East Texas drawl, "Well, just make it a brief and we'll play it inside." Black lives matter. Unfortunately for some, they don't matter much. I'd been on the job for all of 2 or 3 weeks, and he was the top editor in the newsroom. I left the newsroom that day feeling dirty and compromised. I remember calling home to Illinois and asking my dad, "Should I quit?" His response was no. He said no one wants to hire someone who quit their first job after only 2 weeks. He added, "Work hard and get hired by a better newspaper, after you've put in at least a year there." It may have been good personal advice, but it's lousy guidance for how to improve a society. If good people won't stand up to racism, who will? This is why I support the Black Lives Matter movement. Peaceful protest is always an appropriate way to seek a redress of grievances from government. When he ran for president, Donald Trump condemned professional athletes for taking a knee during the national anthem. They harmed no one, but were disparaged for quietly protesting injustice. It made people uncomfortable. Good. Comfort the afflicted. Afflict the comfortable. What happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis was shameful and wrong, and sadly, this type of conduct has been tolerated in police departments for far too long. It is unfortunate, but not surprising, that urban violence has followed in the wake of this tragedy. The answer isn't tear gas. It isn't rubber bullets. It isn't glib comments from a politician hunkered behind a wrought iron fence. Rage is boiling over. We have to ask ourselves why. The Minneapolis officer charged with second-degree murder in George Floyd's death had a long history of excessive force complaints, and yet he remained employed. Over the years, I have written on police misconduct issues. In many cities, it is difficult to fire a bad cop. Much of this has to do with labor union rules and the arbitration process, which all too often protects incompetent, abusive officers. We need to do a better job of policing the police. After all, if good people won't stand up, who will? Scott Reeder is a veteran State House journalist and a freelance reporter. You can reach him at scottreeder1965@gmail.com. Normally, we turn to the death notices for the week at this time. This week, we have no death notices to report for Rantoul. So we will continue with local news and opinion. And now a letter to the editor from Deborah Rawlings of Rantoul. To the editor. I have a request for the leaders, elected or appointed, public or private, who serve the people of Rantoul. Last week, Jared Parker, a Black Baptist pastor in North Omaha, Nebraska, walked out of a meeting with Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts, in which they were discussing the killing of a Black protester a couple of days earlier. Parker said in a video he had made afterwards that he had walked out of the meeting because Ricketts had addressed the group of Black pastors and Black leaders as "you people." Audio of the meeting that was leaked later appears to show that the governor said "you guys" rather than "you people." The governor apologized. Parker accepted the apology. The point is that when leaders see "my people" and "you people," then we, all of us, have a problem. I am asking Rantoul's leaders to ask themselves this question. When you look in the faces of the people of color whom you serve, do you see "my people" or do you see "you people"? And now a guest commentary from Chris Powers. When misinformation becomes racist. George Floyd is beyond anyone's capacity to hurt him now, but some people have made it their cause to insult him, even in death. Among the misinformation now circulating over America fences and on social media is the grotesque lie that Floyd did not actually die last month, or that his death was somehow staged to advance liberal causes. Lies, rumors, and misinformation often make the rounds during or after major events. Pick a disaster like 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination, and you can usually find several competing, often ludicrous, theories as to its cause. But in this case, there's more to the mistruths than just the speculation of anxious people in stressful times. Let's start with the essential facts. George Floyd was killed May 25th by a Minneapolis policeman. According to the results of two autopsies, one the official, final report of the Hennepin County Medical Examiner. A state criminal complaint charges now-fired officer Derek Chauvin with second-degree murder in Floyd's case. Three other officers, also since fired, are charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder. His last evening on Earth, Floyd was arrested and handcuffed by police for allegedly passing a counterfeit $20 bill. Offering little resistance, Floyd was taken down to the pavement and pinned there with Chauvin's knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. "I can't breathe," he gasped repeatedly. In the last 2 minutes and 53 seconds before Chauvin lifted his knee, Floyd was unresponsive, showing no pulse. The killing, recorded by bystander cell phones and storefront video, has angered average citizens and police officers alike. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have marched in over 500 mostly peaceful protests nationwide against police brutality and for greater accountability in police use of deadly force, especially against unarmed Blacks. In Minneapolis and several other cities, the demonstrations have sparked violence between some protesters and police. They have also attracted groups from both the left and the right who piggybacked their own agendas of looting or rioting onto the case of police reforms. Over the weekend, as protests grew very large, much of the unrest has diminished. The vast majority of protesters have peacefully pursued their constitutional right to assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances. Still, hundreds of police officers have been injured in clashes. A half dozen officers or former officers have been killed. A few thousand demonstrators have been arrested, typically for throwing objects at police or refusing to clear areas when ordered. And a few thousand protesters also have been injured by police wielding batons, tear gas, and rubber bullets. In hundreds of videos uploaded to social media, some of the police seem as out of control as rioting civilians. And that's really the point here. It's what the protests are about to begin with. Justice for Eric Garner, Freddie Gray, Tamir Rice, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, Laquan McDonald, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and literally hundreds of others. It should not be controversial that Black Lives Matter, but some people want it to be, and they may have told you it should be. They'd rather you not understand racial bias is subtler than a burning cross. It keeps the average Black American poorer, less well-educated, and more unable to get ahead in life. It allows bias in law enforcement to stop Black motorists for drugs at higher rates than whites, even when drugs are more often found in a white driver's car. It breaks up Black families. It can make a newspaper run a headline baselessly connecting people to a crime. It can even make a person's neck look like a knee rest. And if you start to see things that way, don't just shake your head. Open your eyes and wake up. You are having a nightmare. Chris Powers is a resident of Rantoul. Travel among the plans for early in retirement. You can't go on forever, so says Patty Early. And so, at 63, the Counseling Center Secretary at Rantoul Township High School is calling it a career. Time to look toward life's next chapter for the 31-year employee of the school, whose last day on the job is July 13th. Early's role has been to support the counselors and teachers. I work a lot with the schedule, take care of the grades, credits, and graduation requirements in tandem with the counselors, Early said, adding she did a great deal of summer schoolwork and a variety of daily things that happen periodically. Early isn't a native of Rantoul, but she came to town early. She and her parents, Bill and Vivian O'Hearn, moved to Rantoul when Patty was 2. Dad was in the Air Force. Computers were coming into more common use in 1989 when Early started at RTHS. I don't know if I could pick it up because of the weight, she said. Her printer was a dot matrix one. Computers have made her job easier, yes and no. I love technology, she said, so it's been easier for me. I still keep track of everything, too, because I don't totally trust the computer. Early always double-checked everything because she has found the computer to be wrong at times. Sometimes the program might not have everything in it you might be looking for, she said, or it might not have the information you're looking for exactly. That's why people like Early are valuable. Early said she got to know many students, and not as closely as counselors did, but still pretty close. A parade was held for Early, and co-worker Julie Kavanaugh's people showed their appreciation for the years of dedication. What happens now for Early? I'm sitting on my patio watching the world go by. I'll spend more time with my kids and grandkids. We camp. We have a travel trailer, and my sister and her husband in Virginia have one, so we try to get together with them. Husband Stan is also retired. The Earlys have 2 daughters, Christy and Carrie. Early also likes the 2 G's, gardening and golf, but she said she's really bad at the latter. Maybe I'll get better now that I have more time to do it, she said. She said she will look back at her time and relationships developed at RTHS fondly. I'm going to miss the people, miss the kids. It's been a great place to work. I made some really good friends who will be friends from here on. It's hard because you have that routine. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of June 10th. I hope to read with you again soon.